Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep your love, I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name is Chris Lambert.
My name is Travis Bean, and today, let's get high, man.
Yeah, so high, like up into the sky, in the clouds, past the clouds.
Chris, how often do you get high?
I want to say I elevate my psyche.
Oh, you're talking about like a spiritual high.
Every kind of high, baby. Every kind of high.
You don't need drugs to get high.
No, all I need is a good Kanye song. That's my drug.
We got a good song for you today, then.
We do. It's one of the ones that I go to the most for that high feeling, you know?
Yeah. Right now, I'm sort of just like feeling loopy because we spent about a half hour talking about the song, and I'm already kind of in an elevated state. I hope I'm okay for this episode.
Are you hungry? I'm hungry.
Oh, I just ate like 6 Choco Tacos, so I think for now I'm good.
I'm going to go get some Cooler Ranch Doritos. I keep calling them Cooler Ranch. They were Cooler Ranch for like 2 years back in like 1996.
Are they not anymore?
Aren't they just Cool Ranch these days?
Seriously? I always say Cooler Ranch.
Cool Ranch Doritos.
We got to find this out. We got to stop everything right now and figure this out.
Absolutely have to. Yeah, they're just Cool Ranch.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody calls them that if you were around when they were Cooler Ranch.
Cool Ranch versus Cooler Ranch. Doritos' long, slow descent into madness is an article from 2014.
Sounds like an article I would have written.
Yeah, here we go. That Doritos changed Cooler Ranch to Cool Ranch in the 90s.
Really? Wow.
Wild.
I ate some knockoff Cooler Ranch Doritos somewhere. I don't remember where. And I was instantly like scoffing at them like, huh. Bullshit, but then I ate them and they're pretty good.
You're a traitor.
I know, I felt dirty.
How dare you?
Can't help it. I like ranch chips.
Yeah, I like them much better than just ranch.
Yeah, I used to, back when I was like a whale, I would put ranch on lots of stuff, but these days I don't really take to it very well.
Well, you know, you're from Illinois, I'm from Ohio. You know what the Midwest is. Devourers of ranch.
Yeah. Well, I will say when you and I lived in Iowa, I think maybe I was spoiled a little bit because the ranch there is actually really good because their ranch is super like fatty and, you know, it's buttermilk ranch. It's good shit. Half the time when I get it somewhere, it's no good.
This is way more. I've talked more about ranch in the last 2 minutes than I ever have in my entire life.
By the way, Hidden Valley, if you want to sponsor the show, we'd love to have you.
Come on, HV. We will promote you so good.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe we can partner with Jay and come up with like a Cooler Ranch Choco Taco.
It's just ice cream in a cool, in like a Dorito.
Gosh. I'm high right now, so a lot of stuff sounds good to me.
I actually went to Taco Bell and got like the Cool Ranch Taco.
I've had it.
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
I mean, yeah, it's a gimmick.
Though, Taco Bell, if you want to sponsor the show,
absolutely.
We will say it's the best taco we've ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I feel like there might be some conflicts of interest there because, you know, we're pro Choco Taco. We represent the Choco Taco brand, and I don't think they have anything to do with Taco Bell.
I've never once in my life wondered the origin story of the Choco Taco and who made it, but now it's all I can think of.
I've just accepted it in my life. Maybe we should get to this song before we go down too far down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, you know what happens when Kanye gets you high, you just start rambling about anything.
Can't help it, man.
So Get 'Em High is one of the tracks, the ninth track on the College Dropout.
It's one of them.
One of them. And this song comes at an interesting change in College Dropout. If you've listened to the other episodes, we've been figuring out what the narrative elements of this album are and have kind of found a trend from the intro through Never Let Me Down. And we're curious if it was going to continue on into Get 'Em High, into Get Them. Oh, my God.
Man, you are so high right now.
Into Get 'Em High. And I think we would say that if Never Let Me Down is kind of the end of Act One, Get 'Em High, if there is more of a cohesive narrative on College Dropout, would be the start of Act Two. And on Act One, we see Kanye dealing with a lot of social issues about what keeps people down and from their dreams. And you get that in We Don't Care, All Falls Down, before Kanye starts looking ahead to how he could improve his own life, which you get the counter movement of that downward imagery with I'll Fly Away and Spaceship. And then you get those two things competing on Jesus Walks. The devil's trying to bring Kanye down, which is what we saw in We Don't Care and All Falls Down, but he has Jesus walking with him, which is what we saw in I'll Fly Away and potentially Spaceship, heading off into this new stratosphere of where life could take him, which is
getting
why that
high,
track
man.
That's right. Get 'Em High. Oh God. Which is why Jesus Walks ends with Kanye talking about, you know, I have this record and this could change my life. And then Never Let Me Down, you have him feeling like he's on this high and that he's on this next step towards greatness. And you have Jay kind of being this inspirational figure on the track, showing where somebody can get to in their career. And then you have Kanye and Jay Ivy kind of just starting out and part of the process and adventure to get where Jay-Z's gotten to. So you kind of get two ends of the spectrum, but it's no longer a matter of like, will I have this opportunity? It's just like, this is what I'm going to fucking do. Now watch me go do it.
Yeah.
And then we get 'Em High, which kind of continues along that line of thought. You still have the verticality, I guess, or the upwardness rather than the downwardness with the idea of like high. But instead of it being about your own personal high, it is about everybody outside of you. Get them high. And how do you do that? And what's the process about getting other people onto the level that you're on or dealing with everybody else in the world?
Yeah. Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head with what Get 'Em High represents. You know, it's literally in the title. Like, how do I do this? And part of the progression that you've been describing from song to song has been Kanye slowly piecing things together. And while we can note that in the narrative, you know, like what's actually going on in the songs, like on a plainer level, you know, Kanye starts out solo on We Don't Care. You know, he's just got kids and a choir and he's kind of with the people and he's figuring out things on his own. He kind of has this outward look on society and piecing himself into it. And then we get Spaceship, which has some like guest features of people he's close to. And then it expands to Jesus Walks, where like Jesus is there. And then it expands to Never Let Me Down, where God and Jay-Z are there, you know, the apex. We see him ascend and ascend and ascend until he gets to Get 'Em High. And I think I really like that about College Dropout. It seems kind of there's like a humbling quality to it, that he has these guest features come in and they feel like they're either on his level, like they're in Spaceship and they're figuring out things with him, or they're sort of teaching him, like Jay-Z does on Never Let Me Down, or like I think Talib and Common are both doing on this song. And I feel like that's so key to early Kanye, because new Kanye has it all figured out and he's preaching his ideals to the world and he's trying to be a leader, to whereas I think on College Dropout, he's learning to become a leader.
I think that's one of the twists that we see, as you're saying, like later Kanye and how he uses features, like from Yeezus on, it almost feels like every feature that he has is capturing a different part of his psyche.
Totally.
Right? Which is something that we talk about on Hold My Liquor, for example. Like, Justin Vernon and Chief Keef aren't Justin Vernon and Chief Keef on that song. They're the vulnerable side of Kanye and the egotistical side of Kanye.
Can't handle no liquor, but these bitches can't handle me.
And that plays out throughout Yeezus. Every guest feature falls into one of those two categories.
Like what you're describing in Hold My Liquor, you know, to me feels like a director piecing together a movie. It's not, hey, Justin Vernon, come in and do your thing. Hey, Chief Keef, come and do your thing. It's, hey, I need you to represent this. And it's not necessarily, hey, say these lines, but it's like, I need this energy from you. So, you know, that's what we get from them. And that's what we get from, is it Assassin on I'm In It? And then we get from Keen Louie on Send It Up, you know. It isn't necessarily, hey, say these words, but it's like, I need this from you because this is what this character is going through at this point. This is what I need to represent.
It's almost like they're the, if it was a scene in a movie, they're like the lighting or the score or something that's just right, adding that tone to the character. Where I think on Late Registration, like Drive Slow, like those aren't aspects of Kanye's psyche. Paul Wall is Paul Wall, and GLC is representing this kind of like big baller level. So you have Kanye being kind of the small fish, thinking about like, you know, this is where I was at in my career, thinking about Drive Slow, where Paul Wall's that next level up, GLC's, you know, the end all be all, kind of how we're seeing Jay-Z used on Never Let Me Down, or even like Talib and Common. Like here, Talib has more clout than Kanye at this point, but Common is kind of the end all be all of these three. And you see the same kind of thing happen on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Nicki and Jay-Z aren't representing aspects of Kanye's psyche. They're representing aspects of the society Kanye is part of, and that he's kind of just surrounded by these monsters. And the same thing happens with All Falls Down. Not All Falls Down. The same thing happens with So Appalled. Those are like the eight people on that track are aspects of Kanye. It's just showing like this is the excess and the ego and the culture that I'm a part of. Now I'm going to go and try to have a relationship. Like, yeah, good luck.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like one's better than another. We just see Kanye go through motions, and he's graduated to a point where he uses guest features in a much different way. And you can really see the seeds of all of that back here, where you can find a narrative throughout Get 'Em High, and we're going to talk about it. It's not as easy to pinpoint, though, because I think with Talib and Common's parts, we're trying to make sense of it in terms of what Kanye's expressing on the album, as opposed to looking at it and being like, oh, like Talib is definitely playing off what Kanye said here and there, and Common's representing this at this stage of his character on the album. Like, it's us more or less taking guesses at it. It's just not as set in stone as something like Yeezus.
Yeah, and that's just a byproduct of where Kanye was at in his career here and at as an artist compared to Yeezus, right? Like, this was 2003 that he was working on this, as College Dropout came out February of 2004. And Yeezus came out a decade later, which it's kind of funny because all the kind of anecdotal popular theories about mastery, they always say it takes 10 years to master a craft or master a skill. Not just to become good at it, but like 10 years of like practice and focus to become a master. And you see that Kanye had these early narrative elements on College Dropout. And we often would talk about Yeezus as being really where he put it all together in that masterful way for the first time. Like, he does it great on all the other albums. But I just personally feel like there's a difference between how he's doing it, even on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, than on Yeezus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just from that kind of technical perspective, you can find the basic elements and like ideas, but Kanye also couldn't go up to Talib and be like, hey, I need you to do this because like this is the concept and this is specifically what I'm doing, so like you're this. Or go up to Common and be like, I need specifically this from you. Kanye's like, please, Common, can you give me a verse? Like, please, Talib, can you give me a verse? And then has to work with that the best way that he can to fit it into the vision that he has.
Totally.
So, of course, it's not going to be like Yeezus, where on Yeezus, he can just say to anybody and be like, I need this from you specifically. And they're like, yes, Kanye. Thank you, Kanye. You're welcome, Kanye.
Yeah.
So Get 'Em High. The nice thing about Get 'Em High is that there are no backing Sonic samples. So
yay.
We don't have to spend 20 minutes talking about the lyrics of that. The bad thing is that
there are 1,000 references to other things throughout the song.
Yeah, much more so than on other songs, which will make sense, I think, when we start looking at what kind of the subtext of the song is, and getting into the meaning and purpose of it. You're like, oh, yeah, of course, you'd be referencing to a lot of other like hip hop songs. But so we have a lot of that to talk about.
I'm excited. Let me take another puff really quick. All right, let's do this.
Your puff sounded like a snorting inhale.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Get 'Em High. So Kanye starts, and it seems kind of throwaway, but it's actually pretty meaningful. I'm trying to catch the beat. 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 And what that just means is that he's trying to feel the music and find the spot to like hop into the beat and start rapping. And that little bit of meta commentary of getting into the song actually sets up a lot of the meta focus of this track and what it means in terms of Kanye's idea of rapping and trying to rap. And he's literally trying to catch the beat and get other people high off of his music. So while it's just like him as a rapper being like, oh, I'm trying to catch the beat, it's also him as a rapper being like, I'm trying to make my way in this industry and catch the beat that's going to like break through.
Totally. Like it becomes symbolic and emotional at that point. Like it sounds kind of goofy, but you put yourself in his shoes and you've, you know, come off that high of Never Let Me Down. And suddenly you're standing in front of people and you need the rap. You got to catch the beat. It's intimidating and you kind of sense that from him in this, like he's trying to get it and then get into his groove and go into the song.
Yep. So song and career, all just in one intro.
Crazy.
Yep. So then we get the hook. Now throw your motherfucking hands, get 'em high.
Throw your motherfucking hands. Get 'em high. All the girls pass the weed to your motherfucking man. Get 'em high. I ain't never tell you to put down your hands. Keep 'em high. And if you're losing your high, then smoke again.
And that's what he's hoping for. He wants everybody to throw their hands because they're feeling the music, right? Not drugs, not anything else. Like they're into what he's producing, what out, like records he's making. But then he also has the dynamic of all the girls pass your weed to your motherfucking man, get 'em high. So there's both the like musical high and the drug high, which in contrast or juxtaposition like this kind of starts to feel like they're one and the same. Like music can be a drug or music can give you that high, which is something Kanye explores on Late Registration with crack music.
Yeah, I love that. There becomes something inherently good about his intentions with the song, because as goofy as the song can seem, you know, with Kanye being like some immature kid who just wants to get with a girl at some point, when you again bring in the context that Kanye is trying to get people high and trying to have his music speak to people, there's something just inherently good about all the goofy shit he's saying here at the beginning.
Yeah. And that dynamic also just plays into something that we're going to see Kanye do throughout his career and something that he's already done on this album. If you look at We Don't Care and was it Spaceship? Both reference more soulful relationship-based songs and use those lyrics to give context to the personal situations that Kanye is describing. So you see Kanye taking these romantic old school songs and applying them to the longing that a society or culture has, or the longing an individual has to break out and break free. And you can see the inverse then happen in his lyrics when he starts to talk about these relationship dynamics later in the song. That is not just him talking about like getting with a woman, that it has more subtext and context with his actual career and music as a whole and a longing for that. And that hook kind of sets up that dual meaning to the relationship dynamics with, you know, throw your motherfucking hands and get them high and girls pass the weed to your motherfucking man. We get music and we get relationships, and the two are juxtaposed because Kanye sees them as overlapping and almost being symbolic of the other.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it all the time, how at this point it almost has become annoying how often Kanye does it. Like any romance he's talking about is conflated with fame. And anytime he's talking about fame, like it's so intertwined with the romance. But I think it's cool to think about, you know, what he does on, say, Yeezus, where, you know, Hold My Liquor represents this woman and him connected with his past. And then I'm In It is the indulgence of sex and the indulgence of celebrity. There's so much movement to it and so much to read into. It's really cool to see him, again, working through how to do that better on College Dropout. Like here, it's kind of hard to get that he's conflating romance with fame, that this woman, like getting with this woman represents finding his sound and like getting people high. Like, that's probably all there. And we know Kanye's probably thinking about that because he goes on to do that in every single album. But here it's a little more 101-ish. Like both the elements are there. He just didn't find a way to intertwine it like he does in his later albums.
Yeah, they're really just placed against each other.
Yes.
In the most basic fashion, which is why you see verse one being what it is and verse two being what it is.
Yeah.
They're not really mixing. Where you look at My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, for example, and the way he introduces the romantic element on Devil in a New Dress, and then we follow that relationship breakdown on Runaway, Hell of a Life, Blame Game, Lost in the World. And we know that Kanye viewed that album as kind of him recapping his relationship with the music industry, with fame, culture, people, and that the relationship on there is not just Kanye and some woman, right? In this Dark Twisted Fantasy, it's Kanye and his relationship with America, his relationship with music. Same thing happens on 808s and Heartbreak, Life of Pablo, yay. But you can see those things all done much more cohesively. And I don't want to say obviously, but just more in a more refined way than here.
I don't think obviously is a bad way to put it. I guess personally, the more I study art, I find that to be a good thing and a refreshing thing. When somebody's, you know, trying to communicate something symbolic so well that it becomes almost like, oh, like, of course, this is what they're doing. And then you start to see, you see that end road, and then you start to see the threads throughout the movie or the album or the book that you're reading. And you can connect all of it, and it feels kind of obvious in that way.
That's very true. And that's one of the things that have made a lot of great filmmakers, like, gotten them their reputation. Like, it's not a bad thing that Spielberg's obvious at times. It's not a bad thing that David Fincher's obvious at times, or Paul Thomas Anderson's obvious at times.
Right. When Daniel Plainview comes, you know, is in the oil field and the fucking flame is like lighting, and he's kind of, he looks devilish because of that. Like, that seems pretty obvious that you're describing Daniel Plainview as this like devil figure, but everything that built up to that is really what makes it powerful, that just the actual image being obvious isn't really the issue.
Right. And you don't have a character being like, you're the devil.
Yeah.
It's just, we get it in the imagery, and the imagery is obvious, like the emotion's there, but you just don't have the tell.
Right.
You have the show, you don't have the tell, but you can also try to show too much and then people are just lost. Like, I didn't realize this thing could in any way be symbolic of that because he didn't do the obvious steps to get us there.
Uh-huh.
And that might be a little bit of something like, I don't know if there are the obvious steps aside from the juxtaposition to make us start to conflate what's going on in this song with the girl being music,
right?
And music being like a girl.
Yeah, again, it's kind of there, kind of not, but it's funner to imagine it is there.
Yes, very much so. So we get Kanye starting off in the first verse with
my flow is in the pocket like Wallace. I got the bounce like hydraulics. I can't call it. I got the swirl like alcohol. My freshman year, I was going through hella problems. Still, I bit up the nerve to drop my ass about a college. My teacher said I was a loser. I told her, why don't you kill me? I give a fuck if you feel me. I'm gonna follow my heart. And if you follow the charts or the plaques or the stacks, you ain't gotta guess who's back. You see,
we get Kanye starting off with the first verse with the net, net. Now my flow is in the pocket like wallets, which it's kind of funny that he starts with the little bit of hesitation leading up to getting in the flow. Mm-hmm. It's almost kind of him catching the beat again. Both of us thought for the longest time, and I'm sure we're not alone, that he said, my flow is in the pocket like Wallace.
Yeah, which I thought Ben Wallace.
And I thought Wallace from The Wire. And I always loved that Kanye was making a Wire reference.
Yeah, I just assumed that, you know, Detroit Pistons were big at the time. That must be what he's referencing.
And with bounce following up, you're kind of like, oh, basketball.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But nah, he's just saying that his flow is in the pocket like a wallet. And when you're in the pocket, it just means that you're flowing like on the beat really well, which gets back to him saying, I'm trying to catch the beats.
Mm-hmm.
And with everybody having told Kanye that he was just a producer and not a rapper, and he's like, yo, I'm a rapper. him saying right here that his flow is in the pocket, that's not just like, well, yeah, you're a rapper. He's like, no, I'm a rapper. Like, you need to pay attention to me, and like, I can do this.
Yeah. I love the ego that's set up here because, I mean, Kanye's ego throughout each album is always used, ironically, it's always used to make a point. And I think here, it's used in a very story-like way. Like, he starts out very sure of himself. And, you know, in the middle of the verse, we're going to see that this teacher figure told him he couldn't make it, that he couldn't, essentially, he couldn't be a rapper. And when you think about how that behavior, that egotistical behavior, is born from being told you can't do something, again, there becomes something very charming and humbling about the fact that Kanye resorts to this sort of boorish, exaggerated behavior to prove that he's worth something.
It's one of the reasons why Kanye's been so motivating for so many people is because he sets up the dichotomy of like, yeah, they told me I couldn't do it. Not I was born to do this. I've always been great. Like, but no, like I was told I couldn't do anything and the world was against me. And like, I got this and it lets other people feel like they can be the same.
Exactly.
So his flow is in the pocket. And then I got the bounce like hydraulics, just that he has that catchiness to what he's saying, that he has that like bounce to his rhymes and lyrics. And then I forget what we said about I can't call it. I got the swerve like alcoholics. Oh, yeah. So
these lines are kind of confusing. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I can't call it just means that he's not going to be able to say what comes next or what he's going to do next because he's swerving all over the place, whether it's lyrically, with the rhyme scheme, with the flow, like an alcoholic. Because alcoholics that are behind the wheel can't control the car that they're trying to drive.
Yeah. I kind of actually, not that I'm putting myself on Kanye's level, but like, I kind of feel that. Like, on some level, you can't, like, I'm a writer. Like, say you can teach someone how to be a good writer or reporter. Like, there are steps. But sometimes, like, the way you work, you just know how you work and you know how to do things. Like, you just learn it over time. I feel like him saying, I can't call it, is like, how do I explain that I'm a rapper? Like, I just do it. Like, I do what I do. And you telling me how I'm supposed to be, like, that doesn't make sense to me. I'm just who I am. And I'm a good rapper because of it.
I feel like it also describes this show. Like, we can't tell you what we're going to talk about next. We got the swerve like alcoholics, but we got the bounce like hydraulics, and sometimes our flow's in the pocket like wallets.
Yeah, sometimes we're making an amazing point. Sometimes we're talking about Patrick Swayze movies. You just can't predict us.
No, we're all over the fucking place. In fact, right now, you know what I want to talk about? Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch. Yeah, let's do this. I have never watched a single episode of Black Mirror, but let's do this.
I had it either until last night when I started watching. Now, I want to talk about Get 'Em High.
We'll do that later. Maybe on the bonus up.
See, that's what we call a fucking swerve.
Can't keep up with us.
So Connie goes on to say, my freshman year, I was going through hella problems till I built up the nerve to drop my ass out of college, which that's pretty straightforward. But it goes to, he wasn't a rapper, right? Like, now he's a rapper, and it's getting at this idea of, like, he had this ability this whole time. My teacher said, I's a loser. I told her, why don't you kill me? Which
damn,
seemed so aggressive at first. And then we remembered the lyrics to Beck, where Beck, who looks like a child when the song came out.
What song is this?
Loser by Beck.
Okay.
From 1993. So open the door, I'm a loser, baby, so why don't you kill me? He says, soy un perdidor, I'm so sorry. I took 3 years of Spanish.
I did too, but you know what? We're not expected to remember something we studied for 3 years. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, right? It's especially Ohio Spanish. I don't think my teacher had us watch, like, I think 20 movies over the course of the year. She wasn't a very good Spanish teacher. But he said, I'm a loser, baby, so why don't you kill me? And then there's a double barrel buckshot. And he says, I'm a loser, baby, so why don't we kill? Why don't you kill me? And Kanye, often when he refers to a song in this way, likes to bring in some of the context from the song. And I'm a loser, why don't you kill me? A lot of the concepts that Beck introduces, while nonsensical at times, also just get at the idea that this person's doesn't have it all together, is kind of a fuck up. He says at one point, someone came in saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding and a stain on my shirt. Don't believe everything that you breathe. You get a parking violation and a maggot on your sleeve. So shave your face with some mace in the dark, saving all your food stamps and burning down the trailer park. Which, yeah, a loser seems like somebody that would try to shave their face with mace in the dark and doesn't spend their food stamps and is on food stamps and burns down their trailer park.
Yeah. More connections to Beck. He kind of raps on this song and even notes that he was rapping on this song, which is kind of weird to think about. And Connie later has an interaction with Beck at the Grammys.
So many years later.
It's almost like he retrospectively was like, ooh, I need to make sure like the connection to Beck on Get 'Em High is clear. Like, oh, I'll run up on stage when he goes up.
Yeah, what are the odds of that? Kanye has it referenced a lot of musicians. It just happens to be Beck.
Yeah.
So just Kanye could have been painted in that way, like that kind of loser, somebody that, like, you know, why don't you kill me? I give a fuck if you fail me. And kill me kind of has that metaphorical concept there. Like, you're going to kill his college career and, in a sense, like, kill any aspirations he has by failing him.
Right.
But he doesn't care. He's going to follow his heart. And now that's getting back into him building himself back up. If you follow the charts or the plaques or the stacks, like, you ain't got to guess who's back. So Kanye dropped out of school and then went on to have this mega successful producing career, much less, like, he hadn't even had a rap career at that point. You see, I'm so shy that you thought I was bashful, but this bastard's flow will bash your skull, and I will cut your girl like past the troll, and I don't usually smoke but past the drone, and I won't give you that money that you asking for. Why you think me and Dame cool? We assholes. That's why we hear your music getting fast forward, cause we don't wanna hear that weak shit no more. Your motherfucker. And he says, I'm so shy that you thought I was bashful, which, classic Kanye line.
C-H-I.
Yeah, Chicago. I'm so Chicago that you thought I was bashful. But this bastard's flow will bash your skull. Which, you know, people from Chicago aren't known for being bashful. And that's kind of the duality of Kanye. Like, you think he's bashful, but he has this flow that has that aggression and, like, ego, and it'll bash your skull. And I'll cut your girl like Pastor Troy. Pastor Troy had a song that was pretty big in 2002 called Are We Cutting? And it's just Troy trying to have sex with a girl. And cutting is sex. Kanye kind of brings that in the same way that he brought Beck in to get at these like people that had made hits. And Kanye, with this idea of Get 'Em High, is also looking to make his hit and make his mark in the music game for a song that he is rapping on, right?
Right.
The same way that these other artists have. And then he says, and I don't usually smoke, but pass the dro. So it's like, he doesn't normally, if you're looking at the metaphor, he doesn't normally try to make songs that are outright hits, right? But, you know, pass the dro at this point.
Yeah, let's get people high.
Which, God, dro is short for hydro, which is a type of weed.
That's what I got right now.
I'm so proud of you, Travis. You with your collection of plants. And I won't give you that money that you asking for. Because I guess at this point he just is successful enough that he has money.
Yeah, that's a confusing line, actually.
Or maybe it's like the person that has the weed is asking for money. And he's just saying like, no, I'm not going to give you money.
Maybe.
Yeah, I actually have no idea what to make for that line.
First question we get on the show.
But it does set up that idea of like, yeah, you're asking me for money. I'm not going to give it to you. Why do you think me and Dame are cool? Dame Dash, who is one of the co-founders of Rockefeller. We assholes. So it's really just a setup for Kanye to be an asshole.
Right.
And maybe that's just it. Like, if you're sharing weed with somebody, they might be like, hey, can you give me a little bit of money for the weed?
Oh, yeah, I bet that's it.
And he's just like, no.
No, thank you.
You're welcome that you got to smoke with me.
Yeah.
My presence is a present. That's why we hear your music in fast forward. Because we don't want to hear that weak shit no more. And we don't want to hear that weak shit no more. Gets at a song called I May Sneeze. Yep.
Nope. Here we go. Oh, yep. Yeah. We don't want to hear that weak shit no more. Do anybody else make hits
anymore? We don't hear that weak shit no more. Gets at a song called Keep the Receipts that was Kanye, an unreleased track that featured him and Old Dirty Bastard. And on it, Kanye talks a lot about his success as a rapper and musician. That's essentially all the song is. It's like Common's part on Get 'Em High, but a whole track, Kanye's version.
Yeah.
And it starts off with Old Dirty Bastard on the intro saying like, yo, this is Dirt McGirt, which what a nickname. I'm chilling with Kanye West. He's killing y'all on the beats. He's killing y'all on the tracks. And Kanye says, where your plaques at, dog? And ODB comes back saying, the game is officially over. Go kill yourself. So there's initially this idea of like, you can't compete, like go kill yourself, like I run the game. But at the outro, you have Old Dirty Bastard coming back in and saying like, Aftermath is still making hits. Lunatics, So So Def, Bad Boy, Wu-Tang, Rough Riders, Cash Money, Dirt McGirt. They're all still making hits. And then it says the game is over. Go kill yourself. Go kill yourself. We don't want to hear that weak shit no more. And I think to us, the implication there, go kill yourself initially was like, you should stop trying. But at the end, it's almost more motivational. Like, these groups aren't playing games. Like, this isn't a game. You need to kill yourself and not make weak shit. Like, kind of that five beats a day for three summers. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to level up, and like, because we don't want to hear that weak shit. So Kanye, by referencing this song, kind of brings that back in. He's establishing like his dominance, but also saying like, yo, y'all need to up your game, like, because this isn't a game. And like, you need to kill yourself to work harder and reach this level, because that's what I've been doing. So then the hook comes back in, throw your motherfucking hands, get them high. Hopefully you're feeling the song at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And then verse two comes in, and we actually have Sumiki Rainey hopping on this verse, which is kind of funny because she was just referenced on Never Let Me Down.
Now who the hell is this emailing me at 11:26 telling me that she 36:26 plus double D? You nine girls on Black Planet B when they get bubbly at NYU, but she hail from Kansas. Right now she just lamping, chilling on campus. Sent me a picture with a feeling on Candace, who said her favorite rapper was the late great Francis. W-H-I-T, it's getting late.
So you get You Got Mail and Kanye again, like finding the pocket, like now who the hell is this emailing me at 11:26? That emailing me at 11:26 is a reference to Notorious B.I.G.'s Warning.
Who the fuck is this paging me at 5:46 in the morning, crack of dawning, now I'm yawning.
Biggie starts the song off by saying, who the fuck is this paging me at 5:46 in the morning, crack of dawn, and now I'm yawning, wipe the cold out of my eye, see who's paging me and why. And it turns out these guys that Biggie used to run with heard something that these other guys are going to try to kill Biggie because Biggie's empire has gotten so big, he's now a target. And it's just Biggie talking about like how fucking awesome he is and how he's going to fuck these guys up before they can fuck him up. But Kanye, in the way that he did so much on College Dropout, countering the gangster rap style, plays on that idea, but instead of it going into this gangster rap, like, I'm the fucking man kind of thing, you just get Kanye trying to hook up with a chick and not having the clout to necessarily convince her to hook up with him, which is just that good, like, post-gangster subject matter that Kanye introduced. But, you know, the pager gets updated to email, and instead of being killed by somebody, it's a girl saying that she's 36:26 plus double D's. You can see why Kanye would be interested.
Sounds right up his alley.
Yeah. And you get the contrast. Instead of morning how it was in Biggie's song, it's nighttime for Kanye. I assume it is, because why would it be shocking if somebody emailed him at 11:26 a.m.?
Yeah, right.
You know how girls on Black Planet B when they get bubbly? Black Planet was an early social networking site that was designed and catering to Black culture. And it was kind of a jobs board, social networking, all of that. So, you know, the girls on there when they get bubbly.
Right.
Send them some messages. She's at NYU, but she hailed from Kansas. I wonder if that kind of foreshadows workout plan, maybe a little bit.
Maybe.
Or is just, you know, Kanye's getting to know this girl. Or she's still in school and maybe she'll drop out of school. It could have some ties to that, but it's pretty vague.
Yeah, I think if we're keeping with the theme of, you know, getting high, meaning like people getting into your music. Again, there's that kind of metaphorical reading the whole time where, you know, people get high off Kanye's music and he thrives off that. So instead of just looking at this verse as kind of Kanye trying to get laid, it's Kanye learning how to get this one specific person high, you know, how, and this one person ends up representing everybody in a way. Again, conflating romance of fame, the idea of trying to impress this girl could just be Kanye's first step towards finding his rhythm, his beat, his flow, all that.
And you could extrapolate it more to like making a song, which is sure. Something that kind of Talib gets at too, that so it's not necessarily trying to hook up with a girl, it's trying to get this girl to like his music as an artist, or even trying to make a song, and a successful song is like hooking up with a girl.
Yeah, I like that.
But right now she's just lamping, chilling on campus. So you can apply that to the music. It's not doing too much. Kanye has to do something with the beat to get it up there. She sent me a picture with her feeling on Candace. A guest feature?
Candace Owens?
Oh, God. Don't get me started. But weird foreshadowing yet again. who said her favorite rapper was the late great Francis.
Francis, W-H-I-T, it's getting late, mommy. Your screen saver say tweet, so you get to call me and bring a friend for my friend, his name Kwali.
You mean Talib, lyrics stick to your rib, I mean. That's my favorite CD that I play in my crib, I mean. You don't really know him, why is you lying?
Yo, Kwali, she don't believe me, please pick up the line. She gon' think that I'm lying, just spit a couple of lines. Then maybe I'll be able to give a dick all the time and get a high.
And then it's getting late, mommy. Your screensaver say tweet. Tweet was a female artist at the time who had a hit song called Call Me.
And I can be your baby mama, though I like to call me real late at night when my man is asleep and take a red eye to the west side.
So that's Kanye's play on that, that the screensaver had this girl tweet on it, and tweet had a hit song. So we get another hit song maker. Not, but oh my god, Twitter wasn't a thing yet. But it almost makes it sound like Kanye was talking about Twitter
again. Another piece of evidence that Kanye traveled to the future before he made the song.
Yeah, what is this fourth dimension that he's in?
Beck, Candace Owens, Twitter, just saying,
all in this song. It's so weird. So you got to call me and bring a friend for my friend, his name Quelly. And this is where Kanye's girlfriend comes in, and she's the one saying, you mean to lib, lyrics stick to your rib. And I think that line, while just complimentary to Talib, it kind of gets at a dichotomy that's set up between just saying like hit song shit like Pastor Troy versus like what Talib does. Where his lyrics like stick to your rib because they're meaty and they have like weight to them.
Totally.
I mean, that's my favorite CD that I play in my crib. You don't really know him. Why is he lying? So she doesn't believe him, and Kanye has to kind of prove himself by having Talib on the track.
Yeah.
Which you can view that as what Kanye has to do to get people to buy into him as a musician. You need to have these features that make people think more of you by having people on there that they already think highly of, which is what we see with Jay-Z, having Consequence on a song, having Most Def on Two Words, having Common on the song.
Yeah, there's something very real about this part of the verse, because Kanye, everything he's saying to this girl feels like real life. Like, because you have to assume that he's made Get Him High and he's already done his verse and he knows what he's going to say. And it's almost like he's saying to himself, like, oh, shit, like, I have this line in the song where I said Talib was going to be there. Like, I mean, hey, Talib, can you spit a verse for me really quick? And then, of course, in real life, Talib had to spit his verse really quick and Kanye threw it together and got the record out.
Yeah, wasn't it that Talib was saying, like, he had a day before the record came out?
Yeah.
Or it was 2 days before the record came out, or the album. And Kanye was like, hey, can you send me this verse?
Yeah.
And Talib was in Paris or somewhere and had to go find a studio and record this. So I just want to say, people that are like, oh, he rushed Ye, and or he rushed The Life of Pablo, or rushed Yeezus. Like, why can't we get Kanye that took his time? Yeah.
Always been on that level.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of artists are, generally.
We just don't see how the sausage is made most of the time.
Yeah.
Kanye being as open as he is. We do, and he gets the flack. But I do, it makes me wonder if he had the first verse, and when he got the verse from Talib was just like, hey, let's record this real fast. Or if he already had this verse knowing that he would get something from Talib, like what the chicken and the egg scenario is here.
First question we'll ask him when he gets on here.
So Yo Kwa, she don't believe me. Please pick up the line. She gotta think that I'm lying. Just spit a couple of lines, then maybe I'll be able to give her dick all the time and get her high. Which gets back to all the metaphorical stuff that we were saying. Like, if he could get this verse from Talib and get this validation from Talib, then maybe he's going to be able to have a music career. And get not just this girl, but everybody else high.
Yeah, and put out this dope-ass song.
Yep. So then Talib comes in. And Talib's verse is kind of structured into A, B, A, I think we would describe it. And you can hear that sonically as Talib's voice is normal for those first four lines. And then it sounds a bit more muffled and distorted in the middle four. And it jumps from like the left ear to the right ear if you have headphones on. And then it goes back to the normal voice for the end. So it would seem that the only reason you would do something like that is for effect and for meaning. So we'd say that you should look at understanding the verse in that way, that the first four lines and the last four lines are a bit more connected, and then the middle lines are doing something else.
I wonder what the four lines before the actual first line here would have been then.
Yeah, that's one of the stories that Talib told in a, what is it when people talk? An oral history, right, of the College Dropout. Talib was saying that when he recorded the verse, he actually had another set of four lines. And when he heard the song for the first time, he was actually really pissed because that's not how he started the verse, and that he thought Kanye had cut the lines. And apparently Kanye told him that, like, that's not what happened. They must have been lost. It wasn't necessarily Kanye that first got the track. So Talib said he was kind of upset about it for a while, but everybody kept praising him for the verse, and he eventually got over it. But I can't help but wonder if the lines were kind of not in, like, they didn't convey what Kanye wanted to convey, so he just cut them and then was like, oh no, what happened?
Threw him on the cutting room floor.
There's a story from Robert Greene's 33 Strategies for War, where he talks about playing into what people ask for, even if it, you know what you're going to do. So he uses the example of Alfred Hitchcock. And on Hitchcock films, Hitchcock knew exactly what he wanted, like every shot, all the emotion from the actors. But actors often want to do things their way or have ideas. And Hitchcock found that if he were to just tell them no, it would have a disastrous effect, as they would start to not respect him or get bitter towards him. So what he started doing was telling them yes, but they do it after they get like the shot that's in the script or the shot that he wants. So they would work really hard to get the shot that he wanted, and then he would take the film out of the camera and then film however many takes they wanted in the way that they wanted. And he would compliment them. He would tell them what a good idea it was. And then he would just go the fuck back on. And he knew by the time that the movie came out, they wouldn't care. They'd be happy with the final product.
Wow. That's kind of what I do with you in this podcast.
I don't doubt that for a second, actually. Because you know I don't listen to the episodes.
Yeah, and that was a great story about Alfred Hitchcock that everyone's going to hear. That's awesome.
Oh. So it's like that, huh? It's like that, huh? Well, if I'm such a loser, why don't you kill me?
I will kill you, metaphorically, by cutting all this out.
You slick, swerving son of a bitch. So, Talib, his verse starts with, like, and this is what I was kind of cryptic about what he's doing. It seems like he's talking to himself in the first four lines and then talks to Kanye in the way that Kanye's like, yo, pick up the line and like tell this girl something. And then he goes back to talking to himself. Or it could be that he's thinking about like what he's going to do with Kanye and then has kind of a subconscious voice come in and kind of counter his thinking with Kanye before going back to the initial, like, eh.
Yeah. So both narratives are kind of doing the same thing.
Yep.
Although the idea that the phone conversation is happening keeps more in line, I think, with the narrative we're talking about throughout the song and how Kanye's sort of looking for guidance. It would make sense that Talib, you know, somebody who is established at this point and can point Kanye in the right direction, would be saying the things he says to him on the phone.
And it also follows up with, like, you know, please pick up the line. So this is him getting on the line, and the same way that he got on the song. Like, it's essentially Kanye saying, hey, would you be on one of my songs? And Talib being like, eh, should I not? Okay, I'll be on the song. and then we get him on the song. And well, let's get into it.
Yeah. I can't believe this nigga used my name for picking up dimes, but never mind, I need some tracks, you trying to pull tracks out, and my rhymes is finna blow, you trying to blow backs out. Well, okay, you twisted my arm, I'll assist with the charm, and yo, ain't you
mean. So Talib says, yo, I can't believe this guy used my name for picking up dimes. And we know that Talib was actually the first one that took Kanye on tour, so you could maybe imagine that Kanye was going around being like, Talib believes in me.
Right.
But never mind, I need some tracks, you trying to pull tracks out, which sets up a dichotomy that we're going to see play out with Common as well, kind of these more established people. Talib needs tracks. He needs production music, which is what Kanye was so known for and good at the time. And that's what he, as this rapper and artist, needs, while Kanye is trying to pull tracks out, which gets at the idea that if you're having sex with a woman that has a weave in, the weave's on a track, and if you pull her hair, you're going to, you know, pull the weave out.
Yeah.
So essentially a euphemism for good sex. But that gets at the dichotomy that, like, Talib's focused on the art and Kanye's focused more on the fucking.
Yeah.
Focused more on the fucking.
That's probably the title of the episode.
I tweeted at the University of Texas in Austin that we would like to teach a class there on Kanye. I think this is the kind of highbrow lecturing we can deliver.
I think we should just submit this episode to them.
They block us on Twitter. Officials show up at my door. Please leave the city.
Actually, leave the state.
We have Ted Cruz's blessing to get you out of here. He's seen your tweets about him.
If Beto O'Rourke, though, becomes president, I bet he can get you back in.
Please, Beto. Please. For the love of God. And my rhymes... So, you trying to pull tracks out. And my rhymes is finna blow. So, he has these rhymes that are about to blow up. It's gonna be great. And compares that to Kanye saying, you trying to blow backs out. Which is, again, sexual imagery. So the artist versus somebody that's just concerned about fucking, which kind of gets back to this idea of, like, what is Kanye doing with the music? Is he on the level of Talib, or is he like Pastor Troy? Is he just trying to make hits and blow backs out, like kind of that momentary thing, or is he an artist?
Right.
But then Talib says, well, okay, you twisted my arm, I'll assist with the charm, which is kind of just him saying, yeah, I'll hop on the track, I'll help you with this girl, I'll help you make a hit. And that's when the voice modulation kind of happens. Ain't you meet that chick at that conference with your mom's assisted the bomb, but she got the bougie behavior, always got something to say like a okay player hater. Anyways, I don't usually fuck with the internet. But we get a question leading off. It's not just like, hey, Kanye, Talib here. Like, yes, girl, I know Kanye. But it's Talib saying, like, ain't you meet that chick at the conference with your moms? And sister's the bomb. Boy, she got the bougie behavior. Is the chick in question here, like, the chick that Kanye got the email from? Or is it Talib being like, oh, is this the same chick that you were talking about before? Like, is it a little bit tongue-in-cheek, like he's razzing Kanye?
I think keep it in line with the lines that preceded it. You know, I need some tracks, you trying to pull tracks out, like kind of contrasting the real rapper with the whack rapper. I think, again, there's contrast here. Like, hey, why are you going after this girl when you could have this girl? Which is basically him saying, why would you be this kind of rapper when you could be this kind of rapper?
Yeah. If, it's definitely like a lesson. If we're looking at the literal meaning with like him assisting with the charm, not very charming. Like, hey, isn't this the other girl you were talking to? And the conference with your moms could be, you know, Kanye's mom was an English professor and maybe had gone to conferences with her. It could also be that Talib, after saying, I'll assist with the charm, and you know, this girl having a friend for his friend, having a friend for Talib. It could be that he's thinking, like, didn't you meet another girl at a conference you were at with your mom. So the you here is no longer Kanye, but it's like Talib referring to himself.
A lot of layers here.
Yeah. And we're not saying that that's the right way. It's just it's a way to interpret it. And we don't have necessarily the information to debunk it.
Right. I think it really gets at what we say about Kanye a lot and what makes his song so attractive to so many people, because they're so relatable in their vagueness. Like, we can definitely dissect his song. I mean, we do it on the show. We can dissect the songs and point to what certain lines probably mean. But a lot of the times we find that his lines can mean three different things, and that doesn't make any of them less powerful or not make sense. Like, his lyrics can have that vagueness that has a sudden applicability to whatever you want it to mean. And I think that works here. Talib could be talking to himself. He could be talking to Kanye in his head. He could be talking directly to Kanye. And it all kind of fits with, you know, the theme going on.
Yeah, because if he's talking to Kanye, then he's kind of chastising him like, you had this other girl that seemed like she had her shit together. Like, why are you messing around with this other girl that doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's Talib talking to himself as he's getting ready to help Kanye, it's almost like he's thinking like, yeah, you met this chick at a conference and she was the bomb and like, yeah, she got that bougie behavior, but she has opinions and she has a point of view and like, that was awesome, which gets at the musical aspects of this. Like, why are you going to make a song like this? Didn't you have this other like deeper, more powerful, more artistic song that you were going to do?
Yeah.
We get always got something to say, like a okay, play a hater, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing here. Because he frames it as like, she's the bomb, the bougie behavior could be viewed as a negative. But okay, playa was a message board forum. And you know how people are on message boards. You always have somebody that's like the hater and always has something to say. And you're just like, oh, this person's commenting again.
You got the Jordan C. Johnson of the group.
The Jordan C. Johnson. You know Jordan on Rate Your Music is going on there and just like hating on things and being like, how dare you say that?
for context, that's rateyourmusic.com is where I met Jordan and met him by arguing with him a lot for the first like 2 years that I knew him.
Yeah, I remember even before you told me about him and before he and I even had like a human conversation where we connected as people, we were just arguing about movies and like kind of not politely.
You two just come at from very different angles.
Yeah, it was almost like, how could you say that? You have no idea what you're talking about.
You guys still talk like this to each other.
Yeah, I try to be nicer these days. but that's the kind of, you know, she's got opinions, she's got something to say, she's outspoken, which you could imagine Talib is, that's something that he would resonate with and respect as somebody that's like has these rhymes and has these tracks, has lyrics that stick to your rib. And then he goes with, anyway, I don't usually fuck with the internet.
And this is when he comes out of the phone call.
You really fucking that much or trying to get on cigarettes? And she think it's fly, she ain't met a real nigga yet. No, I apologize if I come off a little inconsiderate. I got the bubble cushion, the sister could get ahead of it.
And, you know, if you imagine that on the phone call with Kanye, like, is that him assisting with the charm? Like, the girl's like, is this Talib Kweli? And he's just like on speakerphone. He's like, what happened to that other girl? Like, she was the bomb. Anyway, like, this is a chick from the internet. Yeah, I don't fuck with that.
Oh, what a troll.
Though it's kind of funny, too, again, with the connection to the future. All Talib Kweli does now, not all he does, but he's on Twitter all the time arguing with like racists and trolls. And you can go through his timeline due to so many tweets.
He's prolific.
Very prolific. So he's fucking with the internet hard these days. Interesting. Interesting, interesting. But we come out of that voice now, and you can almost see his thoughts coming back. Like, he was polite to say, I don't usually fuck with the internet, as a, like, yeah, I'm not down for this. But then when he comes back to just his own thoughts, it's like, or chicks with birth control stuck to their arm like Nicorettes. The thing that you wouldn't say out loud to somebody, but you're thinking.
Man, Nicorette used to be such a part of the zeitgeist.
Yeah, you don't really hear about it anymore, do you?
No.
Yeah, so if you're not somebody that knows what Nicorette is, it was just a patch that you would put on your arm and it would feed you nicotine that was supposed to help with the cravings of smoking. And you would have different levels of the patch and eventually work yourself down to like no nicotine whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just saying there are girls that would have birth control like that if they could. It's just like helping them stay not pregnant because they're having so much sex.
Yeah. My brother and I used to make a joke about Nicorette whenever we would leave my grandma's house and she, you know, she was in her 70s and she was still smoking. We were saying that anytime we like hugged her goodbye, we would like pat her arm and like slip a nicotine patch on there.
That would have been very helpful, very loving. Good grandchildren.
Then visit her every day and keep doing it.
Yeah. She'd be like, Travis, Kyle, I'm happy that you're here, but like, stop coming over.
I see
so
you
much.
Doing that.
Yeah. Like, grandma needs some grandma time. Leave me alone. You really fucking that much or trying to get off cigarettes? Ouch. And that could be if we go with Quelly having thought to himself what it would be like to hook up with this girl and then putting into contrast like, okay, I want to be with this girl. Why would I be fucking around with like a girl that has birth control stuck to their arm like Nicorette? So whether you apply it to Kanye or you apply it personally to Quelly, it just shows kind of a distaste for the kind of music that Kanye might be looking to make.
Right.
At this point, as Kanye's just looking to make a name for himself. If she thinks it's fly, she ain't meet a real guy yet. Now I apologize if I come off a little inconsiderate. Maybe a little. I got the Bubba Kush and a sister could get a hit of it. So it's almost like you see him struggling with whether or not he should be part of this track and then realizing at the end of it, like, yeah, you know what? Like, I can get people high too. So like a sister could get a hit of it. And the word hit works with taking a hit of weed, but also in the context of music and trying to make a hit record, it seems to line up.
Yeah, it's cool.
Mm-hmm. Good job, Talib.
And now we take on the behemoth of the verse known as Common.
Oh, man. Should I start with what Martin said about Common's verse?
Yeah, I think it's at least to provide context for it. And because I think a lot of what Common's doing here is kind of meta, and you know, the way he's rapping has to do with kind of the theme of the song. There's a lot of levels to what Kanye's do or what Common's doing.
Yes. And Common being where he was in the rap game at this point, he kind of what he had been around for a decade and had had a bunch of hit records, hit albums, and Kanye had started off the song talking about like getting into the flow. And like, yo, how impressive is it that I'm like in the flow? And Common comes in and he says things in a much more bizarre way than what you'd expect. And we asked Martin Connor from Rap Analysis, who used to be known as the Rap Maestro. You may know him from the Vox video, The Voice as an Instrument, which looked at Kanye's use of his voice as an instrument. He was the one that made that. You may also know him from the Yeezus book.
I've heard of that.
It's a pretty good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I learned a lot.
It's just the best breakdown of Yeezus in written form that you can find anywhere.
Probably the best breakdown of any single thing ever.
That's true. The best book about Kanye.
Ever. Without question.
Yeah. So Martin wrote the production chapters or sections in the Yeezus book for kind of an intro and then for each individual track. So we asked him about this to confirm because we know a lot about narrative and thematics, but not so much about the details of rapping. So we asked if Kanye having mentioned, and this was something Travis picked up on first, being in the flow and how on rhythm he was, if there was anything to Common not being. And Martin said, well, he left me a voicemail. But I define pocket in an easy to understand terms because it's a complex music theory thing. And then goes on to say that there's the pause between remote and the word control.
Real rappers is hard to find, like a remote. Control rap is out of you, super still got
the pause between Tiger and Woods.
We're not thugs, rock clubs like Tiger Woods in the hood. Should have my own reality show.
So obviously he does it everywhere, but the main point is if you compare where Common is starting and stopping his sentences, they're much, much more misaligned from where the loop behind him is starting and stopping than Kanye's own sentences are. And that might just be have nothing to do with anything and just happens to fit into what Kanye's doing. Or it could be that Common knew what Kanye was talking about at the start and went on to show, like, yeah, you don't have to be in the flow to be great. Like, I'm great. I'm a real rapper, and watch how I just do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're really getting at it. The narrative of the song has been building to this point where Kanye wants to make one kind of song. Tlaib kind of like cautions him to not act that way, you know, and like, hey, let's make real music. And then Common really tears down anybody who would make whack music. And he's so sure of what he's saying about you and is so sure that he's better than you because he's a real rapper that he can sing out of tune and offbeat seemingly and still sound great.
That's the power of Common.
Yeah.
You gotta respect it. Because if you don't, Common doesn't give a fuck. So Common comes in and kind of has that aspect of it. And that plays, again, into the aspect of, like, what somebody does with music. And do you do the thing that everybody likes, or do you do your own thing just because you can?
Mm-hmm.
With Common's verse, instead of going line by line, I think the idea of what we were just talking about with, like, Common coming in as kind of this rapper's rapper and kind of bringing that ego and bragging and more prototypical style. The first half of this verse, there's not much to really say about what's going on or how it applies to the song. It's just Common bragging about how he raps, and that's pretty straightforward.
Get him high like noon or the moon, or room filled with smoke, a hype filled with dope. Y'all assumed I was doomed out of tune, but I still feel the notes, the real nigga quotes. Real rappers is hard to find, like a remote. Control rap is out of you, super still got love. That's why I abuse you who are not thugs. Rock clubs like
to me, where some of the elements that we were talking about start to come back into play is when he says, they say hip hop is dead, I'm here to resurrect me.
How could I ever let your words affect me? They say hip hop is dead, I'm here to resurrect me. Mars is too sexy to even make songs like these. That's why the raw don't know your name. Like Alicia Keys, too many featured MCs and producers is popular. 12,000 spins, nobody got the cop in a album. How come you the hot garbage of? The years clear, your image is looped up. Label got you souped up, telling you you sick when you a dick with a loose nut. Video hard to watch like Medusa. Even your club record need a booster. Chimped up with a pimp cup, illiterate nigga. Read the info. Red across your head, I'm Brad King like Simba. Voted in Denver. I ain't a mad rapper, just an MC with a temper. You dancing for money like honey. I did this my way. So when the industry crashed, I survived like Kanye. Spitting through wires and fires. MC's retiring. Got your hands up. Get the motherfuckers higher than.
So he seems to be focused a lot on the state of the rap game. And in the last half of the verse, really deconstructs what it is about modern rap that bothers him. You know, your image is looped up and the labels got you souped up, like chimped up with a pimp cup. You dancing for money like honey. So essentially, like, you're doing all these things and portraying yourself in a way that's inauthentic. That's just trying to get the record plays or get the short term success that real rappers don't like need and don't try for. The inauthentic. Where he contrasts them that from what he is, which is bread king like Simba and bolder than Denver. So Common sets up this dichotomy and closes out by saying, I did this my way. So when the industry crash, which seems to be what he's been saying, like it's not in a good place, I survive like Kanye, spitting through wires and fires. And if you're just looking at the narrative of the album, like we all know that he's referring to Through the Wire. But it's kind of cool that if you're listening to the album beginning to end, this really foreshadows Through the Wire and it's the second time we've had a reference to the car crash. And we know historically that Through the Wire was this major turning point for Kanye and Kanye being viewed as an MC, which didn't it come out like early in 2003 and was already getting him a lot of attention?
I think so, yeah.
So you could really see Kanye keeping that song near the end of College Dropout. It seems almost like he was building up to something with it. And we get this early reference here about what that could be.
Yeah, it's good shit. And again, I you can listen to the song however you want. I think if you don't really want to track any of the thematic stuff, or you don't even really think there's a storyline and that takes away from the listening experience, like, this is such an awesome song. Like, as goofy as it is, like, it's a fun song. It's kind of, I think, innocent in a way. Like, even though Kanye's trying to get laid, like, he just sounds like a kid who's like doing what any kid at that age would do. But at the same time, if you're really looking for that narrative, I think this is a really cool early case of Kanye laying the seeds of, you know, what he'll later perfect.
Very, very much so. And it has a, I don't know why, but going through it all like this, it has more of a power to me than it ever had before.
Yeah.
Like, I always enjoyed it on that superficial level, but just that understanding of, like, him as a young musician trying to figure out what kind of musician he needs to be. Not just understanding, like, I can be Jay-Z, I can be great, but, like, really looking in practical terms, how do I make great music? And yeah, struggling with that and getting kind of the different points of view from Quelly to Common. That's really pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think just how playful and goofy it is really masks the gravity of everything. Like, this is such an important moment for Kanye as he breaks into the hip-hop world. This is a goofy comparison, but it kind of reminds me of why I like Showgirls. Like, Showgirls will forever be kicked into the ground for being a terrible, shitty movie, the worst movie ever made, strictly because of what kind of movie it is and its style. Like, you see the way the characters talk and how flamboyant it is and how extra it is, and you're like, oh, those are all signs of bad movies. But really, all that stuff is masking this pain going on beneath and this pressure that the characters feel. And I think once you're able to see through that, you notice kind of the tragic layer to it. And the fact that it is so goofy only pronounces that those hardships even more. So I kind of feel like maybe that's what I went through with this song, is the crazier and goofier this song gets, the more I feel what Kanye's probably trying to do with it and the pressure he feels at this point to get people high, you know, to have a career, to finally make it.
Man, we should do a podcast on Paul Verhoeven's filmography.
We probably will.
Because you mentioning Showgirls, I feel like it's very relevant in the fact that if you just saw Showgirls, as you said, it has all the kind of hallmarks of a bad movie, mm-hmm, that isn't trying to be. But if you know Paul Verhoeven's filmography, you know that he doesn't make movies like that. You watch, like, RoboCop, you watch Total Recall, you watch, what was the one that he just did?
L.
And, like, they don't have any of that style whatsoever. So it's either like, oh, I wonder why he just made a bad movie, or Paul Verhoeven made a stylistic choice for a point. And he did a similar thing in Starship Troopers. That was another movie that at first people are like, how is this a serious attempt at a movie? And it's only, I think, really in the last, like, 10 years that movie's kind of had a cult, like, mm-hmm, renaissance, where people are like, oh, no, he knew exactly what he was doing and made a satirical film that is actually really good in how it's critiquing everything that it's trying to critique. And Showgirls is just like that. It's done for a reason in that way. It's not bad. And I feel like with Kanye albums, you see very similar, like Life of Pablo comes out and people are like, how did Kanye release this album when it doesn't flow well? Like, this song doesn't sound like it should go into this song. It's like, yeah that's the point, motherfucker.
Yeah, right.
That's the point. Do you think he just didn't know how to make an album anymore?
Someday people will get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the difference when you understand, like, or when you're looking at it from a larger picture rather than just like the individual thing.
Yeah.
Swerving.
Skirt.
Oh, God, we suck.
I think we kind of killed it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
And I'm coming down from my high, actually, so this is actually pretty good timing.
I don't think I'll ever come down from this high.
I always get really sleepy at the end of my high, so we should really wrap up.
All right, you can go take a nap. I'll get on Twitter and tweet for 20 hours.
Yeah, that sounds good.
You know, if you're losing your high, all you gotta do is smoke again.
Just play, get them high again.
Yeah, keep them high. And that's, I guess that's the ultimate. Oh no, that's not the ultimate twist. You can cut that. He says keep them high throughout the song. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yeah, no, that was fun.
What's the next song we're covering?
The new workout plan.
Are we going back to Life of Pablo?
Are we? Oh, yeah, you're right. So we're going to be doing 30 hours.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, man, that's going to be a behemoth.
Yeah. Okay, 30 hours is going to be... Whew.
Shit. I thought this was hard.
Yeah, be prepared to lose your high and then rediscover it all over again and then lose it and rediscover it. That's going to be just a hellacious episode.
Oh, God. So sorry in advance.
But it's going to be a great one. And then we also have the our version of the Best Kanye West Song Tournament Deathmatch Extreme 3000, which is myself, Travis, and Jordan going through the entire 100 and what was it, 46 song bracket?
Something like that.
And voting to see what song wins our little, I don't want to say threesome.
No, I want to call it that.
Our threesome of voting.
Yeah. Or a threesome in whatever way you want to read it.
You know, vagueness is what makes art special. Nobody explained exactly why the Mona Lisa's smiling, you know?
Exactly.
Until next time.
Stay wavy.
Keep it loopy.